This episode is brought to you by Big Green Egg, the world's largest producer of ceramic charcoal grills, and also by Springer Mountain Farms, over 300 family farms raising birds in Georgia's Blue Ridge Mountains. Learn more at biggreenegg.com and springermountainfarms.com.
Hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio. Hey, guys, we are live at the Charleston Wine and Food Festival. It's March 5th, 2017. We're in the heart of Charleston, and I'm very happy to be here with the Heritage Radio Network crew. We got David and Kat and Katie. They all came down from New York City. Thanks to Springer Chicken and Big Green Egg who helped sponsor this today. All right. So we're now our first panel. We talked with some of the brewers from Charleston, from Edmunds Oast. We talked about the beer scene and some low country food in Charleston. Well, now we're going, showing you how diverse the Charleston Wine Food Festival is. We've got two chefs from Atlanta, Georgia, and a winemaker from Oregon. So you guys, just say your name and say your affiliations.
Ladies first.
Oh, thank you. So my name is Tamina Momtazi from Maysara Winery out of McMinnville, Oregon.
All right, Oregon wine. Woo!
Rusty Bowers, Pine Street Market, Atlanta.
All right.
And Nick Leahy from Salt Yard in Atlanta.
So we're going to talk a little bit about each one of their specialties to kick this off. And first, Tamina, you know, we met earlier today. You were excited to come on the radio show. Some of the features, the wine features of the event that you like. So there's a wine store. Tell us about how you're involved here, that your product's available. But this is a very unique festival.
So all my wines are at bottle, which we get to taste soon. And so I got to do a luncheon yesterday, a winemaker dinner.
And what was the luncheon called?
It was at a farm, so the whole idea was like slow food ideas, and they paired my wines because the whole concept of being a biodynamic vineyard, being environmental friendly, and they picked chefs just identical to that same idea that I had with my wines. So it was a great luncheon.
Your biodynamic wines, and what were some of the dishes that were served?
Can I just tell you the carrots, like, stole the show for me. I am apparently a rabbit. Like, I love carrots.
Cooked carrot dish or raw?
Oh, God. It was glazed, and it was
so this was like one of those
barbecued.
$35 carrot entree dishes?
It could be $100. I would have eaten it all. Like, all it was right. So good.
And then Rusty. So, Rusty,
hello.
Your name came up. Rusty Bowers. I wanted to call you Rusty Brown, but Ted said, no, it's Rusty Bowers. But you're a big craft butcher, and that's really
yes.
happening. Tell us a little about some of the things that you've been doing at the festival as an introduction.
Oh, we had a lot of fun. On Friday, we went to Pugin's Porch and had a dinner with Nick Leahy and some other chefs. Working with Big Green Egg and Springer Mountain Farms. We did a Springer Mountain smoked chicken sausage with bacon and sage.
And that's what you're serving right now.
That's what we have right here.
Right next to the radio tent, we've got this sausage. And tell us, how did you make the sausage? It's really good.
Thank you very much. We take some Springer chicken thighs, grind them with some of the chicken skin, a little bit of our bacon, some black pepper, sage, and chilies, and a little kosher salt. That's it. And then smoke them.
What's the relish? You call it chow chow?
It's a Due South chow chow. So our friend, Chef Nick Melvin in Atlanta.
The other Nick.
The other Nick. The other white Nick.
Two Nicks.
Has a pickle company, and that's his chow chow. So it's pickled cabbage, a little red pepper, a little vinegary, a little sweet. Wonderful stuff.
That's great. And then Nick Leahy. I met you last summer. You came up to New York City with Springer Chicken, Georgia Grown, Big Eggs. Nice to see you, man.
Good to see you again, man.
And tell us about some of the highlights of the festival for you.
It's been a lot of fun. I've done an event every day, so I sort of kept myself busy. I do better with no downtime, but I did an event at Cooper River Brewing on Thursday night, which was really cool. They have a really cool space and great beers.
Were you cooking there?
Yeah, so it was called Foul Mouth, so every chef was making either quail or pheasant or duck. So, yeah, it was a really cool event. Once the gnats went away, anyway.
What was your dish that you
cooked? I did confit quail, so we cooked the quail in duck fat, crisped it up, and just served it with some beets and carrots. See?
You know, carrots
make a dish, right? There you go.
I know. You guys are making me so
carrots. Southerners and our carrots.
Since we're in Charleston, though, you know, a little bit of low country, you know, culinary history. There was a guy, Bill Neal. I'm going to keep talking about him. I know Randy, the festival director, knew Bill Neal. Not that many people know him because he died young. But in the 2000s, his wife wrote a book and has been a comeback. Have you guys heard of Chef Bill Neal?
I haven't.
One of the first. You've heard of him. Mm-hmm. Tell us what you know about him.
I've just heard he's just one of the staples of the Southeast and just kind of such an inspiration to so many people.
So what are some of the dishes that you associate with this region? You mentioned quail.
I mean, low country, it's all, you know, shrimp and grits and, you know, Carolina gold rice. And there's a lot of really iconic dishes that sort of go along with the cuisine of this area. Yeah.
Welcome to the show, man. We did a
dinner at Pugin's, which is the oldest restaurant in Charleston. So they have a side of their menu that's sort of dedicated to all the classics. And then they have like a revamped, modernized menu of it, too. So it's a really cool restaurant to go see all the iconic dishes of Charleston, yeah, in a beautiful old Charleston house. So,
what do you guys think of as like iconic dishes of Charleston? Because I'm coming here from New York, it's my first time here.
Sure,
you know, and I want to come back. What are some dishes that I should try that represent
definitely
this
the shrimp and grits? That's probably the most famous.
Yeah, definitely all the seafood dishes. I mean, right. You know, you're so close to the water here, and that's really influenced the cuisine here a lot. So, yeah.
I was gonna say oysters.
Oysters,
yeah.
The oysters are amazing here. They're a little bit saltier here than the Northwest.
Go get some of Claimer Dave's oysters. He's good stuff.
Well, a lot of good heritage pork here as well.
Nick, you got to pour us some beer.
I bought a couple special ones. So, yeah. My two favorite breweries from Atlanta. So we bought some Creature Comforts beer and some Sweetwater beer. So
wow.
This is a Creature Comforts. It's a double cocoa bunny. So it's a chocolate milk stout that they make with Condor Chocolates, which is out
delicious.
Of Athens, Georgia. And then Sweetwater just had their 20th anniversary, and they brewed this double IPA as their 20th anniversary beer. So, Rusty, crack that open.
Absolutely. I'm going to saber it.
And, Nick, you also bought a beer.
I can saber this for you guys. This is my profession.
Did you do the sabering? I know the festival kicks off. Everyone sabers champagne.
Oh, wow, Sweetwater tastes really good.
I was still, you know,
recovering
it. Did anybody
see that, sabering to kick off?
I love sabering.
You did. You got to come up and sit with us, too. You're awesome.
She actually sells my wine over there. That's Jesse
Smith.
Come on,
we'll talk about wine too. So get up here with us. But you popping? You know, Nick's got me three beers in 5 minutes. That's
a
record.
How I roll, Jimmy.
So you brought me off of one. Kat says her favorite beer is Orpheus.
Yeah, so they're right in Piedmont Park in Atlanta. They make great beers. They're really known for like their sours and their stuff like that. But
boys, one beer at a time, guys. Yeah. Come on, I'm gonna overwhelm everybody.
Oh wow!
And more stuff. So let's dive into Georgia. Let's just like. Wow, you guys are here in Charleston.
Whoa.
Doesn't seem that far away, but it's a
cheers.
Different...
There's a party right
and
there.
She's, to me, is on her third beer in 5 minutes. The rock star.
Help her back up.
All right. Tell me about this scene in Georgia where you guys are from. In particular, you as a craft butcher, Rusty.
Yes.
You know, tell us like, kind of the things that you do, things you're involved in.
Oh, absolutely. One of the things I love the most about Atlanta is just the food community. We're all friends. We're all brothers and sisters working together and sharing ideas, sharing events. Every Saturday, I'll teach classes at the butcher shop about like, whole hog classes, sausage making classes.
Weird meats classes.
Weird meats. We did an unusual meat class with Nick Leahy where he came and did some octopus. We did some Peking duck, some braised goats.
You know, my buddy in New York, these guys at Harry and Ida's, Will Horowitz, last week there was a charcuterie masters event.
Oh,
and,
wow.
And, you know, we hear about people talking about meatless Mondays, and I know a lot of the slow food people that I know don't eat meat, but I'm like, phooey! I love hearing about master butchers and charcuteries.
Meat and vegetables taste great together.
Yeah. But he was roasting an alpaca last week.
Oh, wow.
You know, talk about even at Heritage Foods, they're trying to get people to use more goat. Because, you know, the male goats get slaughtered. So, you know, whether you care about animal welfare or you're just a carnivore, I mean, we have to keep track of this whole food system. So tell me more. I want to hear more about the meats you're doing and, you know, the impact you guys have in Georgia. That's what
we're talking about. Sure. We are proud to support, I think, 8 local farms right now is who all we buy from. We're getting 5 pigs a week from Riverview Farms. We also get all of their cattle come through us. And we're getting ready to open a second shop that we'll co-own with Riverview Farms. So it'll be Atlanta's first organic farmer-owned butcher shop called Chop Shop.
And Nick, what have you learned from him? I mean, you're taking classes.
I was like,
I'm
allowed to say that on radio, actually. Yeah. But, no,
you guys are bad boys. If you're with Ted Nelson, Gumbo Marketing, you're all bad boys.
Oh,
I know.
Oh, yeah.
That.
I don't know.
The worst.
It's really great to go into his shop and just get to. I mean, there's a lot of laws around the charcuterie, so we're not allowed to do it in the restaurant as much. So when I go over to him, we get to see the hanging country hams and all that kind of stuff.
Why, is
really
it a state ag thing, or is it a
Well, it's something
processing?
That I'm able to start helping people with and doing some consulting to get restaurants above board on. But, we do a lot of – we have a big curing cave that we play the Motown and the blues.
He's,
all the music,
he's actually allergic
all the
to his
culture.
Own curing cave. It's a fun fact.
Are you guys fans of Salt Bae? You've seen the meme on Instagram, you know, Salt Bae. Oh. As his hand goes up, he's not pushing the salt out, he's releasing it.
Oh, that's and, the secret.
He kind of goes and he slaps and talks to the meat.
I thought
you show him massaging a big cat.
He gets a little weird with it. I'm not going to lie.
I thought the V-neck was the secret. Like a fake thing on Instagram. Oh, no. I was like, this guy is kind of weird.
But it's a secret. It's as you go up, you just kind of let the salt fly out. But are you doing that? You're playing music to your meat? Is that
absolutely.
What you're doing?
Absolutely. So it's cultured.
Told you these were bad boys.
Yeah.
So what are the laws to do that kind of curing?
So we have
is it a state law or a federal law?
Oh, we have the USDA is there every single day monitoring what we do.
So you're really actually a meat processing facility.
Right. Yes.
I feel your pain on
nationally.
That. Yeah. The government comes over, FDA, USDA, right. Inspect me, OSHA.
Right. They're wonderful people. They're listening. They're listening. They're wonderful people to work with.
They are because they're hungry. Yeah. I'm getting hungry. We had some of your sauces over here at the Springer Chicken and the Big
Absolutely.
Green Egg sponsored station. Go over there and get some. And what's the exact name of your dish?
We did a smoked chicken sausage with bacon and sage and a Due South Chow Chow.
It's nice.
Yeah,
all right.
Thank you.
Toast to that. And the beer that we're drinking, so the dark one that you poured, I know Tammany already had three beers, but I'm only on my second. What is it again, Nick? Tell us
so
about this.
So it's from
beer
Creature
culture.
Comforts, which is a brewery out of Athens, Georgia. They've sort of taken Atlanta by storm or Georgia by storm. They have Tropicalia as their signature beer, but this is a new one. So it's a milk stout, and it's brewed with Condor chocolates, which is in Athens as well.
Wow,
so.
The chocolate's not bitter at all. It's really good.
Yeah?
Yeah. I like it. It's delicious.
But so, Nick, as a chef at your place, do you use a lot of craft beer? Is beer a big part of your program?
Yeah, so...
Or is it more wine and liquor?
Well, I do the beer menu because that's where I'm sort of passionate about, and my partner does the wine menu because that's where he's maybe a little bit more passionate about. Not that I don't love me some wine, but we have so many good craft breweries in Georgia that, you know, we do 6 rotating local taps, and all of our can and bottle list is local, except for... I have to have Stella Artois on my menu. That's the only one that is not from Georgia because
people
keep asking for it.
Someone at Sweetwater to make a Stella style beer, right?
Yeah, that's what.
Knock them off.
Boom! Yeah. We just came up with the idea.
That's
there.
Right.
There Wonderful. We go, making things happen here, Jimmy.
So, Salt Yard, tell us how you got started.
We started about 4 years ago. The concept is it's like tapas, so small shared plates, interactive dining, but instead of just being Spanish, we cook whatever we feel like cooking. So whatever comes through the back door from the farm, super seasonal. It's actually a really nice way to cook because, like she's saying, the best dish was a carrot dish last night. So, you know, we don't have to be so formulaic with our meat, potato, and vegetable on the plate. If we want to make carrots the star of the dish, carrots the star, or corn, or whatever comes in. So,
and how important is Georgia agriculture, like Georgia grown, to what you guys are doing in Atlanta?
I mean, I think it's essential. Like,
right. It's the core of what both of us are doing.
A tomato grown in Georgia tastes better when it comes through my back door because it was picked and it's still hot from the sun, you know, as opposed to a tomato that was picked green and shipped across the country from California or something like that.
Right.
So, yeah. And we're a small business, so we like supporting other small businesses, which, you know, the farmers are, for the most part, very small
Great.
Businesses.
So glad you guys are here, man. Yeah. So, Tim, let's talk about wine at the festival. So we did opened the festival with a sabering. And please, you were part of that, so please introduce yourself. I saw photos of that. I want to be there next year.
Awesome. My name is Jesse Smith. I work with Curated Selections. I am a distributor and a sommelier here in Charleston, South Carolina. I used to work with the festival a couple of years ago and actually continue to organize the sabering team for the opening of events here in Marion Square.
So how many people were part of the sabering? Because that was always my fantasy, to have a big, giant outdoor... You know, sparkling wine. Is it champagne too? Or?
The champagne actually came from Veuve Clicquot this year. We were very honored to have that as our champagne. We like to match the number of saberers with the anniversary, so we actually had 12 saberers this year.
Wow. That's really cool.
It's kind of hot, right? I mean, in your world, in Oregon, do people do anything crazy like that? Champagne sabering? Or
you come over late nights, after parties? Yes, we do that. We have to act professional during the day. We don't need to care.
I've had guys saber some bottle conditioned beers too. Have you seen that?
Oh yeah, I've done that. That's
so
awesome.
You're a distributor of wine in Charleston.
That's correct.
So how is her wine here? Like, tell me the legal track. So did you guys import it, distribute it? Is it for sale at a wine store?
It is.
How is her wine at this festival?
Her wine is for sale at 2 different retail stores here in Charleston, at Crushed Fine Wine and at Bottles Beverage Store. The wine is supplied through Tamina from Mesara, comes to us on an awesome refrigerated truck. We get it here, we let it sit for a couple days to settle back down, and then we take it out and show the world. They love it.
And you happy with what's going on here?
Yes. I mean, Curated has been with us for 1 year, and we're very, very excited because their team is amazing. They know wine, and that's really important because they know, like, the chefs, the farmers, everyone, because it's really important to know those kind of people to get and then tell the story about my wines.
So Charleston's a big wine town.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Judging by the people in this festival.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. My question for Nick, we're going to keep bouncing around. This is from someone in the audience. Nick, what is your philosophy of flavor dinners?
So that's a dinner that we started doing. We've done three of them now. So it's sort of like a next level beer dinner where we don't just take it and pair it, but we actually talk about why they flavored the beer that way and how they flavored the beer that way. And then we use that beer in each course, not just paired with. So it's cooked into the food. So you get a true, true pairing. So it's sort of delving a little deeper than your average beer dinner. So
that's great. And Rusty, are you doing anything with wine or beer?
We do a lot with the wine. Yeah, we did for the Falcons going to the Super Bowl. We didn't like the way it ended, but we did a Dirty Bird sausage. We took Wild Heaven's White Blackbird Saison and made a chicken sausage with that. We'll do feature different breweries and brines that we do, and just love cooking with beer, love cooking with wine.
So you guys, you have your USDA, you know, facility.
Yes.
Is that part of, you have a restaurant too, or is it more of a butcher shop?
No, we're just
a
butcher shop. We sell to about 35.
Don't say just a butcher shop, Rusty.
Not just.
Come on.
We are a butcher
Don't sell
shop.
Sell yourself short.
We got this.
You got some fans out there. And then you're talking about your fashion afterwards too.
We sell to about 35 different restaurants up and down the East Coast. We ship nationally through our website. We have our retail store, open-air farmers markets. Each week we'll do about 1,000 to 1,200 pounds of bacon, about 800 pounds of sausages, different salamis and stuff. I'm rocking a leather apron that I got last year when I went to Rotterdam with Big Green Egg, and I helped out some of the Michelin star chefs out there for an event.
So craft butchery, are there other craft butchers that you would say in the States that you look up to?
Ryan
Farr. You think you're at the top of your game?
Yeah, Ryan Farr is one of them. Michael Sullivan's another one. There are more and more coming onto the scene. Lydia and Gruddy. Just a lot of wonderful butchers out there. And it's cool to see all of us coming together and be friends and buddies.
I think people are getting more interested in knowing more about where their food comes from. So that's why
the protein
you know
the
your butcher,
the
that whole yeah. thing, right?
Yeah, we have the tagline, Know Your Butcher.
More beer coming over this way.
More beer.
So Know Your Butcher. I want to make a toast to everybody. Who's here from the festival that loves craft butchery? Sausages, salamis. And that sausage you made, the smoked chicken.
Yeah.
Tell us how you made the sausage. The recipe for that. Because I know it's Springer chicken.
Sure. So it's just the chicken thighs from Springer Mountain. We love those because they're so rich and flavorful. Just a little bit of our bacon, like the different ends and cuts of the bacon, some black pepper, chili, sage, a little bit of chicken skin, grind all that together, and then we smoke it over a mixture of organic white oak and apple.
Yeah.
And then cook it on the egg.
Let's have some fun. First, if anybody wants to try some beers, I think Nick has a couple. I mean, we got some from Edwin's Oast. You can come on over here.
The party starts
now. Come on,
now.
Matthew. You guys can pour. Woo! We got the IPA from Edwin's Oast if anybody wants it. Someone can pour that around.
Wow.
But let's have some fun here. Pretend we're planning an interesting wine and food tasting with the three of you. So Tamina, let's start with you as the winemaker. You know, we've got a great chef working with local product and a great craft butcher, you know. How would you guys start cooking up? Say you're going to do a dinner tonight.
Tonight?
And you
first thing we do is we
out.
Sit down, open some of the beer and wine, and try what we're working with.
Yeah, that's the hard part about beer dinners is beer and wine dinners. You have to taste everything to make sure you're pairing it right.
Right.
So, you know, it's a struggle, but somebody's got to do it, you know. But
it's funny because I actually look at first what the weather is. So if it's a hot day.
Right.
Then I want, like, something lighter. And then I start thinking, okay, well, what beer is our light? What wines are light? And go for there. Because sometimes it's seasonal. Like, I mean, I like to say I can drink Pinot Noir, but I go for the lighter years. And because Pinot Noir and those light vintages are amazing because you can refrigerate it. And it's like party in the...
So today
everything.
It's about 65 degrees in Charleston. You got the weather.
Yes. Oh.
So what, you're going to do a light Pinot Noir or you want to taste the food first?
I make a sparkling Pinot Noir Rosé.
Wow.
Yes. It's to die for.
Sparkling Pinot Noir Rosé with some of those Charleston oysters. You got yourself the start of a good dinner right
there. So we built an open pit. We get that going with some good lump charcoal, some good wood.
Put a little bit of Rusty's bacon on those oysters.
Yeah. Oh, man. And that's that one we're starting to dinner.
Okay, what about hot wings with it as a
hot
side
wings?
Appetizer?
Yeah. We've got some good barrel-aged hot sauce that our friend Terry Koval makes at Wrecking Bar. Put some of that barrel-aged two-year hot sauce on those oysters with a little bit of that bacon. Dang.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah.
Barrel-aged hot
sauce. Dinner begins.
How does
and
he
that's
make
how
his
the
hot
magic
sauce?
Happens right there.
Is he using certain peppers? Are they
He's using
Georgia peppers?
Locally grown peppers. I think Bobby Britt is supplying his peppers.
I think he grows his own, doesn't he?
They've got the Wrecking Bar
farm.
They make the mash and put it into one of their oak barrels they have for their brewery and just rotate it and let it sit for 2 years.
And then you guys sit down.
Hopefully the health inspector for Georgia's not listening right now.
To me, as a winemaker, what are off flavors? Like, let's say there's a certain thing in one of their dishes that you didn't expect. What's an off flavor that would throw that sparkling Pinot out of whack?
Well, I wouldn't say it can take all the heat it wants. Heat's okay. Butter's okay too.
Probably too much acidity.
Like, yeah, because I have amazing acidity, it will just like clean everything up.
I think that. Yeah.
So therefore, I don't think
when you're pairing, you can either do something that you like, sort of mimic the flavors in the dish in the wine together, or you can do them as a contrast. Where if you have something that's if your wine's a little bit sweet, you can serve it with something a little bit spicy, and the contrast makes them both taste more.
Yeah.
Or you can mimic, and it makes them sort of come together more as well. So
I think the bad quality of anything is dirt. I mean, garbage.
We try not to serve too much dirt at the restaurants.
All right, now we're gonna do a dirt dinner.
I don't think that's a defect. My wines pair really well with everything. So it's a good thing, a good quality to
have
my
wines. What
about you
guys? Is there one thing that you would throw in there to screw up the pairing? Like for me, it's a Chaison peppercorn. Like when I have that, a lot of restaurants in New York City are using it. My tongue kind of doesn't really burn.
It has that numbing effect to Chaison peppercorn, yeah.
Right. Oh, that's a good point.
But then if you have a wine that has a little bit of residual sugar to it,
it'll
just clean that up.
Right.
So therefore, I don't think that's a...
Well, that's a wonderful thing about if you're pairing really good food with really good wine, you've really got those buffers there to where they're there to help each other out. They want you to be well fed and drunk. They're their best friends.
Yeah. And what about like a real fatty pork dish?
Oh yeah.
You know, say the weather's
nice. Nice acidic red, honestly.
Yeah. I was gonna say a Pinot Noir.
Yeah, something with some
good
acid.
I have a 2010. Like I was actually just thinking right now, it was like pork belly. Even when he said like a big fatty pork, I was like pork belly would do really well with
but
that.
But the last thing you want is like a lighter wine that just gets lost with the food. So having a big wine paired with that fatty pork belly, they'll play really well together.
Do you think, are there beer pairings that go better with certain foods than wine, or do you think they're equal?
Winemaker's probably not going to like this, but I actually think that beer offers more as a food pairing because there's more different flavors in different types of beer than there are in wine to me, and I think there's more notes you can play off of, and I think that when you cook the beer into the dishes, it's more present than... If you're cooking the wine into the dishes, it stands out a little bit more at the end of the day. She's looking very, very cross with me right now.
I was going to say, you maybe need to try my wine. Unfortunately, my wine was sold out out of here. So, therefore,
must be good. There you go.
Yeah, it must be that good.
Congratulations.
Yeah, that's wonderful. That's a great problem to have.
Yeah, I was like, oh.
And then, Nick, give us a quick recipe, a meat dish that you cook with beer. Something that you would do on the fly.
We had a Springer Mountain Chicken braised thigh on the menu. So we called it a 420 braised thigh because Sweetwater, their signature, their first like really famous beer is Sweetwater 420. It's a pale ale. So we'll take the chicken, sear it, and then braise it half in chicken stock and half in beer, and it really picks up a lot of those flavors. So it really like steams it into the meat, so it really permeates.
That sounds good. We got another question from the audience for Rusty.
Yes.
Why do you love Big Green Egg so much?
Oh, my gosh.
Because they pay for him to go to Rotterdam.
No way. I loved it way before that. I look at the Big Green Egg not as a grill, but as a wood-burning oven. And we'll do everything from cornbread. We'll take the grate off and do caveman steaks where we get the coals to about 1,000 degrees and throw a beautiful flat iron steak on there.
You'll throw it on the coal?
Directly under the coals.
Wow.
No salt, pepper, season it when it comes off. In one of the classes at Big Green Egg, I teach how to turn, for about $5, how to turn your Big Green Egg into a cold smoker. And that's a lot of fun.
How do you do that?
Cold smoked salmon and cheese. Just with a little bit of white hot coals. Some rosemary branches, maybe a single pecan shell, and then a tray of ice with salt, and then a little wire rack on top, and it just, it's so easy to cold smoke. So I love that thing.
I think the versatility of the egg is what makes it great, because you can literally cook anything from...
Can you bake bread in it, too?
Well, yes, yeah.
Desserts, definitely. Everything.
Put some Lodge cast iron pans on there with just bake some bread in them.
Yeah, cornbread.
Yeah. But even regular bread, we've made cakes on it.
Pizza?
Cold smoke mayonnaise.
Yeah, pizza, yeah.
Roast oysters, you name it. We use ours at least every day.
I'm interested in this cold smoke method.
Yeah.
So pick an item.
Cheese.
And you're gonna cheese. How long do you need to put it into cold smoke?
So by cold smoking, I'm keeping it below 70 degrees. I'm cold smoking. If I use a little bit of apple or rosemary branches, I'm real big on the classes that keep your money in your food, not on your accessories. So that's why we're doing it just for $5. We're smoking with rosemary because you always have way too much rosemary or pecan shells or citrus zest. You don't need to go out and buy your wood chips. So get those rolling with those white hot coals, an hour to 2 hours tops, cold smoking.
Can I take you home?
Let's do it. We'll cold smoke some wine.
What about in Oregon? So Oregon wine country. Tell us where you are in Oregon.
So I'm in the Willamette. Yeah. We have two different climates, too. So I am in the Willamette Valley. So I'm an hour and 15 minutes southwest of Portland, but about 45 minutes away from the coast. So I'm like where the vineyard is. I'm in the Van Duzer corridor, so there's a nice wind gust comes in. Also, I get the coastal breeze, so I'm a perfect climate where to make Pinot Noir, Pinot Gris, Riesling, Chardonnay. I'm trying to remember what I make.
So it's similar to Burgundy, like Burgundy-esque styles of wine.
I like to say I make old style of Pinot Noirs, meaning like to respect acidity, tannins, and alcohol. I don't make big bomb wines. I just make really respectful Pinot Noirs.
And let's have you guys tell us how you got started, because a lot of people are interested in going into culinary and winemaking fields. Did you have any training? How did you get started in this field?
I have a beer master and winemaking degree, so I have a formal education. I went to school at Oregon State, and it is a four-year degree. So I went to Oregon State, graduated from there, worked in New Zealand, worked for a couple wineries in Oregon, and then 2007, I took over my family's business.
So was science a big part of your training?
Yes.
You need to study science, kids.
Yes.
There's no kids here, though.
A lot of chemistry. If you can deal with chemistry.
The youth of Charleston, study science.
Yes.
That's right.
Definitely.
And actually, not for making wine and beer, if you don't have a good science background, you can't do it anymore. You can't just be a home brewer and go up to a larger level brewery.
I thought for a minute I might be a brewer, and thought it was a great idea, but then I thought winemaking's way better because I only need to work 3 months harder, and then 9 months, or like about 9 months, I can like
go
be
to
lazy.
Food and wine festival and hang out.
Oh, go wine dinners and
that's
all.
A good life.
Yeah, I know. I get to travel.
Yeah, we got to toast more. And Nick, how'd you get started? I mean, I met you last year in New York City.
Honestly, I started cooking.
Rusty Bowers.
I started cooking with my mom. She's a great cook. So by the time I was 10 years old, I was cooking with her, and she's a
Rusty
really
Bowers,
the meat magician. That's actually what he's known as in Atlanta. Just for the
Ta-da.
Record, says it on his chef jacket, actually. But yeah, started cooking when I was young, and then I started working as soon as it was legal to do so in kitchens. And I went to college for a little bit. Didn't. Perhaps perform so well there, so returned to kitchens because that's where my passion was. And
did you party hard?
I didn't attend school that much. I guess that's the was the main problem there.
Beer is something that you can drink and live long and prosper with, not like some liquors. But Nick knows what he's doing.
A beer a day. There you go.
That's right. But what were some of the first places that you worked?
So I worked at a restaurant for 4 years when I was coming up, called Food Studio in Atlanta under Chef Chip Oldbrick. That was where I really learned a lot. That's where I went from being a cook to my first sous chef gig and all that. And then a couple other places in Atlanta, some of the other big restaurant groups. And then I went and worked in London for about a year and a half. And then I came back to open Salt Yard when my wife decided she missed the sunshine, so we left London. So,
Russell, do you think that to be a chef now, you have to go to cooking school? Or do you think it's still okay just to work your way up?
Festival in any way sponsored by any culinary schools? Because I got asked
No more.
I got asked this at Atlanta Food and Wine Festival, and I said what I'm about to say, which is no, I don't honestly think that culinary school is all that useful. I think it's better to go work in restaurants, and you just learn a much more like practical and it's more real life. You know, in culinary school, you get 4 hours to plate up one dish, and if one of my cooks takes 4 hours to plate up one dish, he's not going to have a job for real long. But I gave that answer at Atlanta Food and Wine Festival, and I look up at the back of the tent, like where you see the Breville sign there, and it's sponsored by Art Institute of Atlanta, so it was sponsored by the culinary school. So got a little awkward there for a minute, yanked out of there.
And for you, Rusty, tell us how you got started.
I've been a chef for about 17 years, and was fortunate to travel. Had grew up at the beaches in Florida and Jacksonville, and then moved to Maui, then Austria and Turkey, and then New York, and went to school at CIA up in New York, then to Atlanta. Then met Wes and Charlotte at Riverview Farms and really fell in love with the whole, the way they raise animals and just the seeing how that the whole animal wasn't being celebrated, wasn't being showcased in the Southeast, just kind of fell naturally into the butchering, and here we are 9 years later.
Wow. So if you're doing a pig butchering 101.
Yep.
You know, and I don't know anything about it.
Yep.
You know, what would I start with? Like, how would I start?
So what we'll do is you'll walk into our butcher shop. We'll have a 200-pound pig laid out. One of the farmers that raised that exact pig, we'll talk about how they raised it, the difference between that and commodity. And then we'll start with the head down to the shoulder, then the ham. Then you'll cut your own pork chops, make your own bacon. We'll have a big lunch. Usually beer from Wild Heaven or Second Self Brewery or one of the three taverns. We have a lot of fun. Cook lunch on the egg. Big Green Egg, we love you.
What's your favorite? You know, you're geeking out. You're doing, you know, you're breaking down that pig.
Yeah.
Who likes charcuterie? Is everybody? Keep looking at the ladies over there because they're interested. All right. Yeah. Who likes charcuterie? Like, I could live off it, but it's bad for you. It's got nitrates. You know,
I actually wrote a brochure on how they're not bad for you. So I could go into a 15-minute
description. Let's talk about it because some people freak out.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, my wife says, I can't buy bacon with nitrates.
No. Yep.
She doesn't understand. So
only if she's pregnant. Otherwise, you're good, bro.
Right. Back in the 70s and 80s, everyone's packing all these nitrites into hams, hams, bacon, sausages, whatever. And then people were getting really, really sick. And Clinton administration steps in and figures out that they're carcinogens. It's bad for you in large doses. They get it down to 120 parts per million. It's the only way to legally make cured meat, whether it goes into the smoke or the cave. Then you go, hold on a second. I was at Trader Joe's or Whole Foods and saw this nitrite-free with this beautiful little asterisk. Then at the bottom it says nitrite-free at the bottom, except for what occurs naturally. So you're getting natural sources in sea salt, celery, beets. And on average, because it's hard to regulate, they have about three times as much nitrite as our stuff that's straight up. So
you're saying they're just like processing beets and celery
right.
to so create nitrate.
So you're getting it one way or the other. So yeah. Ours is the safest. It's the only way to prevent botulism in meat, and botulism will kill you. It's the only thing that makes bacon taste like bacon, not barbecue. Salami is that rosy red color.
I think you touched a nerve here, Jimmy. Man.
Yeah. This is the thing I'm one of the most
passionate
about. You ignited
the passion
here.
More food history. Who ever read Sinclair Lewis, The Jungle?
Oh.
Maybe in high school? So 100 years ago, what you hear about in China was actually the practices in America then. All these different types of Wild West factories throwing a man or a rat falls in the pressure cooker,
right.
And that's part of your meat. But so these food laws are really part of why food's safe in America. Have you studied them a little bit? I mean, do you know what it took to roll that out? I mean, you're about in China, they're putting powders in to milk. We know that's not the case here, but 100 years ago it was. So what did it take to make America safe and the best producer of these products in the world?
I don't think we're the best producer. I think that the best ones are going to be in Europe. Where they've been doing it for thousands of years and the government's kind of backed off a little. I think right now we're in an era to where we're seeing all these wonderful artisan meats arrive and kind of rise up, and the government is still trying to figure it out and do studies to know it's safe. Like we've just recently backed off from having to cook pork to 165 degrees. Now we can cook it to 145 because they realize trichinosis is gone. Listeria is so rare. Pork is very safe to eat. So we're starting to see the government kind of give control over to the producers and kind of relax the laws like they do in Europe a little bit. So it's wonderful to see that.
I mean, talking about botulism, I know we're going the other direction.
Right.
Trying to not help our appetite, not take it away.
Right.
When I was a kid, they say, oh, don't buy a can in the supermarket that's got a bulge on it.
Right.
But have there been cases of botulism in the last few years in America?
It's really rare to see. We're seeing a lot less botulism, a lot Fury, E. coli. Now when there's an E. coli outbreak, it makes national news because it's so rare. With the 24/7 news, it kind of feels scary, like all that's really out there, but it's not out there as prevalent as it used to be. It's
but I also believe that the food processors, you know, catch it really quick.
Absolutely.
Because that's one thing about farming is that if, like, the incident about the spinach about E. coli was caught it quick and, you know, recalled every product that went. That's one thing that's, you know, our time today is great.
And do you think that for, you know, buying from smaller farms, smaller processors, is safer, or is it equally safe to buying commodity foods?
I think there's definitely a benefit to buying from the smaller guys because, you know that the person that grew your vegetable cared about it as much as you do when it comes through your door from the time it was in the soil. So it's not saying that a big farm doesn't do a good job, but when you can literally look the person in the eye and sort of have that sort of confidence with it when it comes through your door, I think it's just another level. And
I'll tell you, if anybody wants to get us some of that smoked chicken Springer sausages, uh-huh. I think the panel in the audience would love to taste it. What do you think?
Yeah.
You think it's okay to pass it out to
Absolutely.
Everybody?
Absolutely. We got quite a bit out there.
We got some great volunteers here at the, let's say we're live at the Charleston Wine and Food Festival here in downtown Charleston. And I'm loving it, guys. This is fun, right? Hanging with Oregon winemaker, some guys from Georgia. So
let's keep going.
So wine in Oregon, you know, wine and food pairing. I want to keep going with that. We want to have a dinner tonight, so we're going to dig a pit and smoke some oysters with bacon, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Definitely. I'm going to an oyster party. That's where my wine will be at.
Tonight. Wow. Yeah. And where's that?
I keep messing up their name, but it's Raw. I want to say 176 or 761.
But, I think it's 176.
Yeah, thank you.
Sounds more right.
Nick, what was the last beer you poured us? The large bottle.
The large bottle was, so Sweetwater just had their 20th anniversary, so they released that as like a special celebration ale. So it's a double IPA that's hopped with Citra hops, and then they add Brett to it right at the end. So like it's very young in the bottle, so right now it's pretty hop forward, and the sort of like wild yeast flavor isn't there, but as it sits in the bottle for another couple months, I think you'll start to see like the Brett overtake some of the hop, and it'll get a little funkier and wilder and stuff like that. But
the correct term is DMS.
Which one?
The correct term is DMS. That's what it tastes like.
And then, Nick, is there another beer?
This is a really fun one.
Let's pass that around.
This is from Creature Comforts.
We actually have a listener on online Beer Sessions Radio, and he writes down on Untappd. If you don't know about Untappd, all the beers that we taste online. So,
nice.
Ethan Soskal, good buddy.
This one's great. So it's a Berliner Weiss, so it's like a sour, and it's brewed with a little bit of cranberry. So they do a year-round sour called Athena, and then this is called Athena Paradiso.
That's really tart.
So, yeah. People always expect it to be sweet when they see the bright red beer, like a lambic in the glass. So we actually just did a Creature Comforts philosophy of flavor dinner, and this was our opening course, and we served this with the oyster.
Mm.
And we took this beer and cooked it down with a little bit of vinegar, sugar, and a touch of tangerine, and made that the mignonette for the oyster.
I was gonna say, that would be amazing, a mignonette sauce.
And the pairing, I think, was probably the best pairing of the night.
With the oysters.
That tart Christmas on that beer with the oyster was great.
You know, for beer dinners and pairings, let's talk about your service staff. So in Atlanta, you know, what is this typical style of service? Is it more casual? You know, how do you get your servers? You know, is there training you do in-house or
there's a ton of training that goes into the front of house staff. What we try to have them be is sort of that line in between. We're not a white tablecloth restaurant. We're not, you know, overly fancy. We want our servers to be casual but professional. That's what we go for. So a lot of knowledge. Teach them all the things they need to know to talk intelligently about the food and about the wine and about the beer, but don't have it be a stuffy atmosphere.
You know, one thing in Charleston, I want to give a big shout out to Charleston. The service and hospitality here is amazing.
Oh, absolutely.
From the time I came in from Edmunds Oast, I was at the Darling Oyster Bar last night. I was at the Prohibition Bar. I'm really impressed. And coming from New York City.
You hit a couple bars last night, huh, Jimmy?
Attaboy. I had a few places. We brought some Palmetto Pills to the hotel to David. David, our engineer over there.
All right.
He gets paid, but also he runs on beer. So got to keep the beer coming. But I will say that the service in this town is unbelievable. And big shout out to Charleston for the staff, the service at the bars and restaurants. And how do you think it compares in Atlanta, the service?
For being an outsider, I will say it's kind of the similar. I mean, one thing, you know, I'm actually originally from Marietta, Georgia, and I miss about the service in the South is that everyone takes care of everyone. So I will say in Charleston and Atlanta, the service is amazing. Everyone is amazing. Like, they take care of their guests fully.
No, I thought there was professionalism and general courtesy.
Definitely.
Even when I was, I'm going to say it again, Edmund's Oast, he mentioned taking an Uber, and I asked for a local option, and they had one, Green City Taxi. You know, if you guys are in here, call Green City Taxi. They'll pick you up. They get to know you. I do like that. I guess that's what Southern hospitality is, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Getting to know people and courtesy. And
well, that's like when Nick and I do all these different fundraiser dinners. We love for it to be family style. So you're passing around, you're getting to know that community, getting all that Southern hospitality, kind of dining together as a group, not
interacting
isolated.
More.
Yeah, as your own little bubble or something.
So
we
if,
love that.
If I were taking back to taking a butchering 101 with you, because
yes.
I want to.
Yeah.
I'm fascinated
Come
by
on
it.
Down.
You know, what are some of the first, you know, cured products that you would have someone make?
We do, the first ones you would make would be like a whole cure, like pancetta or bacon, because once you grind it, it gets a little more tricky. So just being able to, you know, use that whole pork belly, cure it in your fridge. You could even hang that in your fridge as the pancetta and just let it continue to age. Cured meat should be fun. It shouldn't be scary. And that's our whole thing with our tagline, Know Your Butcher.
You
like,
put that on a
we're
t-shirt,
there to help.
Rusty.
Meat's not scary.
So I'm at home. I want to make a pork
delicious.
Belly from a farmer. I want to cure it. What's that kind of a basic recipe?
Basic recipe would be 2 parts brown sugar to 1 part kosher salt. It's a very basic recipe. 2 to 1.
Salt, sugar, and thyme. Right?
Yeah, salt, sugar, and thyme.
You do like a dry rub and coat it?
Do a dry rub. So put it in a zipper seal bag. We're not going to promote any companies, but just a bag with a zipper on it. Put it in that with a little 2 times brown sugar to 1 part salt. Let it sit in there every now and then. Massage it to redistribute it for 7 to 9 days, depending on the thickness. And then lightly rinse it and hang it in your fridge and let it dry out. Once it loses about a third of its weight to water loss, it's ready.
And then you just cook it like bacon?
Yeah, you could. I mean, that would be more like pancetta. If you wanted to smoke it, it would be more like bacon, but very easy. It should be a lot of fun.
And then how would I, if I did that cure, uh-huh. How would I smoke it in a Big Green Egg?
In a Big Green Egg, you would get your Big Green Egg
cold
to about
smoke.
200 degrees. And you would smoke it till you have an internal temperature of 140. The pigment and meat sets at 138, so you just want to go a little bit above that. Anything above an internal temp of 140, you're just melting fat.
So you just about how long will that take?
It'll take you about 3 hours.
So when you hit the temp, then you're done.
You're done.
It's not about
and
timing.
And then chill it overnight before you slice it, and then slice it and fry up your bacon.
That's good.
But
I'm
have
getting
fun
hungry.
With it. Like throw some chilies in there or some herbs from your garden. Just make it fun. Then add things that you like to it.
So, Nick, I love Charleston. I'm having fun. Mm. What are some places that you've enjoyed eating at or drinking beer at this week?
I haven't drank any beer this week, actually.
Never.
Well, this beer is delicious.
There's one place closed for business downtown. It's called Closed for Business. It's a beer bar. I was recommended. I couldn't get in last night, but I don't know if you went
there. It must be good, then.
Has anyone been to Closed? Is this more of a wine crowd or a beer crowd? Who's
Woo.
Wine? Who's
wine.
Beer?
Who's beer?
Woo!
Beer.
There's more beer, too, if you want it. We got a little bit. Well, David's holding on to one of those over there. Try this one. This is Kvass. It's a sour beer, 2.7%. It's made with rye bread, from Edmund's Oast out in North Morrison in Charleston. Maybe you should try that too, Nick. But it goes with you. I like this Berliner Weiss a lot.
Yeah.
We try to talk about beers and taste them on the show, but we're also here at the festival. So, and as a winemaker, Tammy, I know that you like beer too. What are some of the breweries out in your area that you'd recommend? I mean, you can only get more.
Oregon's got some great breweries.
Yeah, I know.
You got some good choices.
The beer that we go to in our household is Freem, and they're at the Gorge. Hood River, actually. Sorry. Amazing Pilsner they make. IPA. Blonde IPA. I'm a more a cocktail person. I drink too much beer and wine, so now I do cocktails.
Nice.
You need cocktails is to change your palate, right?
It cleans my palate really well.
I usually go back to beer. If I drink too many spirits, I need a beer.
Mine's just one mojito, and I'm good. I keep it one.
You're good. You're on the wrong show, then. I think we're on 3 here now.
Nice.
But and down in Atlanta, so besides your guys' places, you know, go to Salt Yard, pick up some charcuterie at Rusty's. I won't call it Rusty Bowers, but it's Pine Street Market.
Pine Street Market.
You got a great name, man.
Thank you.
Can we buy that apron, the leather apron?
You can. Yeah, this one's now well-scented. I've been wearing it.
You should charge more.
Yeah.
Jazz donation.
Patina on it.
That smell.
You guys want to do some I got a T-shirt to give away. Who likes this T-shirt, right?
Oh, I like beer.
It's a classic. Mm. When we first started our show on Heritage Radio Network 8 years ago, I'd been doing this a long time. I was driving to one of my first shows and playing an old radio station, and a song came on by Tom T. Hall. It goes, "I like beer. It makes me a jolly good fellow." And it basically
was on the
lead-in
song.
I like beer. Well, it was, but then we don't really have the license for it.
Oh.
So now we have, you'll hear it at the end, an original song. But that song inspired me because it talked about how you can keep drinking beer and it doesn't get you up or down. Sometimes wine makes you sleepy. You know, sometimes liquor gets too much, you know. So
right.
I do like beer. But we have this T-shirt. We're going to raffle it off. We do a question. And I'm going to ask, I think this is a pretty interesting panel. You guys are going to ask a couple questions, and whoever has the best answer, we're going to give that T-shirt to. So what would you want to ask your, there's another one. Wrap in 5 minutes. All right. That's why we're doing it. Internal clock after 8 years. So.
Nice.
You guys think of, these are festival goers here at Charleston Wine and Food Festival. What's the question that you want to ask them about either your experience or about their experience here? It must be something you want to ask somebody. Well, that's three questions, this, one each.
Yeah. Nick, you go first?
I was going to let you go while I thought, actually, Rusty.
All right. Have you got a good question?
Well, here's a question for you. Is there a place in the festival where you can buy wine to go? And if so, what's the name of it?
Oh, I know that one.
What is it?
Bottles.
It's called Bottles.
Yes.
So there's actually a wine store at the festival.
Are we answering our own questions?
All right, you're good. Okay. All right. Rusty, what's your question?
What's my question? What is the name of the grill that has the swivel racks that can go up and down? Yes,
am
you're
I allowed
in the back.
To answer? No. Kudu.
Kudu. What's kudu?
Kudu.
Well, it's a grill and an African animal. It's like a giant antelope deer thing.
All right.
Was
Nick,
it the one that did this?
Yeah, it swivels around. I cooked it yesterday.
You got to ask a question that somebody can answer.
What temperature are you supposed to cook your bacon to? See if they were listening to Rusty when he was talking or ignoring them like I was.
Correct, 138.
All right, come on up. Yeah,
come on up.
For somebody. Is it a tie or what? All right, got to get a photo with Katie over there. You got it. Come on, dude, over here, this way, photo up. That's the 8th year anniversary Beer Sessions Radio T-shirt. Look at that. Come on, you can take photos while we keep talking. We're going to wrap it up, guys.
Nice.
Anything else you want to say, like, anything we should check out today in the Culinary Village? Because I'm starving. Who's hungry? I'm hungry.
Woo. Yeah, well, we're still raffling off this Mini Max egg, the big green egg, the small one that you can pick up and carry over at our table. So, guys, come on
guys,
out.
Guys, go over there. I'm going to go right over there and try some of the Springer chicken on the
definitely.
Big green egg.
I think Eric Fulkerson's cooking some Springer chicken over in the third space tent. That'll be delicious.
Wow.
And our boy from Atlanta, Nick Belvin's about to be cooking some, too. So
wonderful.
Before you were helping someone out, cooking fried
that's
chicken.
I was helping out cooking some chicken. That's the third space.
I know. I was going to say, in the wine section, there's a boat photo you can take.
A boat
a photo? Yeah. There's
a boat photo?
Yeah. They were
are you talking about the little Le Creuset boat that all the drunk people were getting in at the end of the festival
in the wine
yesterday?
Section. This is
wonderful.
There's one girl that had a little trouble getting back
taxi
out of it.
Home,
but,
everybody.
Watch out, kids. Raise your glass. Yeah, check out the Green City Taxi. But picture out the sponsors for this segment. Brought Heritage Radio Network down from New York City. You got Big Green Egg and Springer Chicken. And you got to say your names one more time and your affiliation.
Ladies first again.
Thank you. Tam and Mom Tazi from Mesa Winery out of McMinnville, Oregon.
Rusty Bowers. Pine Street Market.
And Nick Leahy from Salt Yard.
All right, and this is Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Thanks to our producers and everybody. We got Katie, Kat, and David all down here from New York City. Catch you next time on Beer Sessions Radio.
Thanks for having us.
Here's our theme song. Listen in. David, right? Take the theme song. Here it goes.
This episode is brought to you by Big Green Egg, the world's largest producer of ceramic charcoal grills. In business since 1974, they've transformed ancient cooking vessels into modern-day masterpieces. Today, they sell 7 sizes of the egg, as well as hundreds of accessories designed to make your cooking fun, entertaining, and delicious. Often copied but never equaled, the Big Green Egg is the ultimate cooking experience. Learn more at biggreenegg.com. This episode is also brought to you by Springer Mountain Farms.
over 300 family farmers raising birds in Georgia's Blue Ridge Mountains. Many of them are second and even third generation. They're committed to doing things the right way. Springer was one of the first poultry companies to forego the use of antibiotics, and they've embraced other humane practices too. In fact, they were the first poultry company to earn the American Humane Association Seal of Approval. Learn more at springermountainfarms.com.